I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative. Toronto residents head for the polls this October. In the lead up to the 2022 municipal election, CGRU is reaching out to all candidates in the downtown wards. Today, Diana Yoon speaks about her decision to run for Ward 11, University Rosedale, and what she hopes to bring to City Council as a climate justice activist and feminist.
My name is Diana Yoon, and I'm a climate activist. I'm a community organizer, and I'm a renter in downtown Toronto. And I'm running to be on City Council on Ward 11, University Rosedale.
Great. And can you please describe to me your political views and your experience, please?
Sure. I mean, I think political views is a pretty like broad question, but I think what drives me and what motivates me and things that like I've worked on most are, you know, I started as a climate activist, as a youth climate activist, and it's the work I've done in my professional career. I've worked on climate action, carbon emission reductions, climate mitigation, particularly with a municipal focus over the last several years. And that's partly, you know, knowing that for future generations, for our generation, that that's going to be like the biggest issue that we're going to face in our lifetime. That's really what drives me in terms of like, you know, regardless of where you land on the political spectrum, I do think that like climate needs to matter. But I think, you know, I do come from it from like a left wing progressive place, knowing that, you know, putting equity at the forefront of our issues, having a social justice lens to this kind of work is also what I find most important. So, you know, that's, I think, a snapshot of kind of where I am politically, but we can definitely talk more about, you know, where I stand on housing, on transit, and the things that our city needs.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to get to the platform questions a little later. I know just first in your campaign, you mentioned that the need for progressive politics in the city. Can you talk more about that to me, please?
Yeah, for sure. So we know that the city is in a state of crisis. We know that over the last few years, people have really struggled. And honestly, like I'm 27. A lot of my friends can't afford to live here. I see people leaving Toronto all the time. And I think progressive politics to me and to a lot of the people I know and the communities I've organized with, like Kensington Chinatown, means, you know, what is reflective of what community needs and like who would be reflective of the diversity of our communities on city council. So, you know, I think progressive can be a fairly broad umbrella term as well. But I think when I talk about like truly progressive politics, I mean, you know, who are the people who are in it to really like look after the best interests of our local neighbors and our communities and not necessarily like corporate interests and like big development firms. And I, you know, I've gotten a little bit of pushback on this on Twitter already, so we can also talk about that.
Great. So for you, when did you decide it was time to run to be Ward 11's newest counselor?
I will be very honest. I was not planning to run in this municipal election. I made the decision, you know, just a week, over a week ago, like in late July, because the news broke on the Toronto Star that the incumbent, City Councilor Mike Layden, was not running for re-election. So, you know, I think from that point, I had conversations basically immediately with community leaders and community grassroots activists asking me if I would run. Just wondering, you know, who is going to like throw their hat into the ring. And it wasn't necessarily something that I'm doing because I felt like, oh, I really, you know, I like want to be a city councilor out of self-interest. It's because of the years of work we've done organizing in our communities and wanting someone reflective of, you know, what I guess, local activists are fighting for on the ground at City Hall.
It's interesting you mentioned Mike Layden. So he was the counselor for about 12 years, actually. And, you know, he was very popular and a trusted voice in the community. What do you think you can do to earn that voters' trust in Ward 11?
Yeah, I really do respect the work that Mike has done. And I think he did do so much work in terms of collaborating with residents and neighborhood groups across his ward. And I know that that work has been very challenging given the increase in the ward, you know, sizes since the last 4 years. We talked a little bit when I made this decision to run. In terms of getting the trust of the electorate, again, I wouldn't be doing this if I felt like I was starting from scratch. I've been an active member of Friends of Chinatown since it started a few years ago. I'm on the board of Cecil Community Center, which serves the Kensington Chinatown neighborhood. And ultimately, I do, you know, and I have roots in like Koreatown on floor. And so I do feel like I'm not starting from scratch necessarily, but I really do believe in that kind of like listening, collaborative approach, because that is ultimately, you know, what a city councilor or any politician should be about, is about amplifying other people's needs and interests and, you know, and not necessarily their own.
So I will get to the platform now and just a few things that I've been asking other counselors as well. So the first thing I'd like to hear your thoughts on is affordable housing, especially on rent control and fighting off rent evictions.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't believe that there are any current city counselors who are renters. I'm a renter. I've moved around like 5 times in the last 6 years in downtown Toronto, because that's the nature of the precarious like rental housing market. And I really do feel like as young people and as like lower income and like working class people, it's extremely obvious that Toronto is unaffordable in terms of like the housing market. But I don't know if City Hall actually gets that lived reality, you know? And I think that in terms of affordable housing, there, you know, I think that the kind of housing activists that I've worked with, like ACORN and with like the Federation of Metro Tenants Association, really knowing like what does affordable mean, you know, it's not just market rate. It's not like 80% of market rate. It's like, what does it look like in terms of like, are people spending more than half of their income on rent, you know? And so what can the city do in terms of creating more supply? I think that we need to do more to really kind of boost up the nonprofit development sector and to really think about ways that we can kind of keep existing affordable housing, but also, you know, when we create new affordable housing, right? Like inclusionary zoning was one of the things that City Council passed in this last term, which is supposed to be a really big win for affordable housing in Toronto, but the thresholds are really low. You know, Progress Toronto and housing experts at U of T, when they were advocating for inclusionary zoning to be passed, which it did pass, but they were looking at like, what it would it look like if new developments had to have 30 to 40% affordable housing? So, you know, that's the kind of ambition I'd like to see from city councilors. And like, I think we need, frankly, in terms of, you know, how we actually get to like true affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. So the second question is, or second topic, it's related to affordable housing, but shelter vacancies and tent encampments.
Yeah, for sure. So I've been really supportive of our neighbors with tents. And I feel like, you know, I understand that it is a really tricky situation. I want people to feel like they don't, that's not their only option, that, you know, there is trust in the shelter system, that, you know, that there is a pathway towards supportive housing. You know, I really respect the work of groups like Encampment Support Network and the, you know, Housing Shelter Justice Network, and really thinking about the kind of platform that they put forward last year, a path forward that looks at some of these demands from, you know, these residents who are Toronto residents also, right? But, you know, they may not have a permanent address, but, you know, I think that like underhoused people really deserve to be treated with respect. Their concerns deserve to be heard. And, you know, I think it is about a collaborative approach. You know, I do understand the safety concerns that neighbors have, but I think a lot of it also is really figuring out, like, the housing crisis is at this unbelievably challenging point. So what can we do to, you know, make sure that people are housed, that they are going through the channels that the city has? And if they aren't, then why, right? And I think that, you know, like, councillors like Mike Layton did a good job of standing up for people in these encampments. And I, you know, but I also know that, like, it wasn't easy. I know people who were at Lamport Stadium, and I know people who were, you know, who felt like they had to stand up against the Toronto police in order to make sure that, like, people in these encampments were not, like, forcibly removed from their homes.
Mm-hmm. For the next one, the environment, and I know that you have your work as a climate activist, also with Climate Justice Toronto and the Atmospheric Fund.
Yeah, so, I mean, most recently I worked at Toronto Environmental Alliance. I'm a grad student now, so it's, you know, work I was doing throughout my degree. Just, you know, it's very hard to make a living as a grad student, but also because it's real work that I feel very, very passionate about. You know, I think that climate action can be really hard for people to grasp in some ways. I think that, you know, the work that I did with T, in terms of, we did a lot of work with community centers and community hubs, and how do we figure out ways to make climate action responsive to the needs of, you know, Parkdale or what's it called, Bathurst Finch neighborhoods, and then, like, multi-rise and high-rises in the downtown, and, like, co-ops and other apartment buildings. You know, I think that's the kind of work where really looking at what does it mean if we have a heat wave, and how can that community center be a cooling center, or what can we do in your apartment and your home to make sure that, like, we have collective responses to climate action. And that's the kind of work that I've pushed both at TAF and at T, to have this kind of equity at the forefront of our climate policy and our climate programs. And that work has been adopted into Transform TO, which is the City of Toronto's climate plan. So that's the work that I think needs to be ongoing. T did a lot of work to push the city to accelerate its climate targets, to go from net zero to not even like an 80% reduction to 2050 to a net zero goal by 2040. But we also know that it can't just be net zero based off, you know, kind of, I guess, like, greenwashed corporate technology. You know, it can't just be we're getting to net zero without necessarily involving the community, you know? And so I think that's when we really look at, like, where the sources of emissions come from, and it's, like, buildings, it's our heating and cooling costs, it's transportation. Like, those are things that are exactly what people want improved in their neighborhoods anyway, you know? And I think that's the kind of thing that we have to really be able to work on simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. So the next one is 2S LGBTQ plus rights and gender affirming care.
Yeah, I think this is, like, something that I'm really excited about. You know, I'm a queer person, I'm bi, and I feel like I barely see that kind of representation in politics. I know that the city has done a lot of work to increase its allyship, I guess, you know, but I think ultimately it's not the portfolio of work that I'm most familiar with, other than, I guess, like, as a personal identity. So, you know, I think it's work that I am really interested in learning from other queer community groups and community leaders. And, like, that's, you know, I think in terms of, like, the platform overall, that is really what it's about. Like, it is a collective project. You know, I think that my kind of like join our team form has open-ended, let's build this platform out together. And I am really interested in, you know, what are the queer groups that, and what are the things they want from the city? You know, I know that we had Pride back in Toronto this year. And I think that that kind of thing, which does rely a lot on like the city's support, is something that I'll continue to support. But also, like, what are, instead of, you know, just like the big festival, what are the demands in terms of the smaller queer community events and stages, like that kind of thing, you know? And I feel like this is an area I have a lot to learn.
The next one is police reform and distribution of the funds.
Absolutely. So I know that this has not been a new topic, but I know that police reform and divest and defunding the police came up a lot in the last few years, partly growing out of like the Black Lives Matter movement in the States, but knowing that we have a robust Black Lives Matter Toronto group as well. And I think that ultimately what it comes down to is that the Toronto police budget is the largest part of the City of Toronto budget, you know, and knowing that and feeling like it is taking up a real disproportionate amount of the limited resources we have, frankly, that get pitted against all other community and social services. I think that that's really where the conversation should be. It's, you know, it's like listening to racialized communities talking about police violence across the city and knowing like what are ways to reimagine community safety. It's work that I've done in Chinatown where we have fought back against having kind of cameras, police cameras on streets. It's work that I've done, you know, really thinking about like what does it mean for us to stand in solidarity with Black and Indigenous and other racialized communities of the city who don't feel safe because of police. And there are other ways to rethink community safety. And I think that's part of the conversation that doesn't necessarily happen at City Hall. So, you know, again, I really am open to hearing what people need. And I think that's kind of where we start, right? Is like, you know, in our downtown neighborhoods, what would make people feel safe? And I think that I have heard that it's not necessarily what the city is in like prioritizing through their dollars by just funding the Toronto Police Services.
For the next one, it's public transit.
Yeah. Again, like I like learned how to bike over the pandemic. So I'm mostly a pedestrian and I'm mostly a TTC rider. And I look to groups like TTC Riders, which, you know, I've gone to a number of their events and their workshops and conferences because we know that transit is extremely underinvested in the city. And I think that like, we do see, you know, the flashy transit announcements here and there, but on a day-to-day, like as someone who takes the TTC every single day, I know that it sucks. And I know that other people really do rely on it to get to work, to get to see their friends and families, to kind of live their lives, and it's insufficient. So what does it look like, you know, in terms of expanding bus routes? What does it look like in terms of, you know, not delaying transit projects just because it doesn't fit a necessarily like a political vision? You know, it's really about, I think, a responsive approach to transit planning. And I think that like part of that also is knowing that how can we make transit more accessible? How can we make it free eventually, which is what we need to do also as part of like Transform TO, if we're ever going to like have modal shift and have transportation, you know, like most trips under 5 kilometers be kind of low carbon modes of transportation, you know. And I think for the climate, for accessibility, for just people's daily livability, there are a lot of ways that our TTC needs to improve.
And next one is childcare.
Yeah, this is really like, I feel so sad anytime I talk to anyone with kids and they're just like, I've put my child on a wait list for childcare like spot while I was pregnant or like before they were born. And I just was like, honestly, like that's unacceptable, you know, knowing that like there is such a limited number of affordable childcare spots and or people are really making like the hard decisions to spend an enormous amount of their income to get their children in childcare. So I do think that the city has a responsibility to work with other levels of government to really advocate for $10 a day childcare. And I also really do want kids in the future. So this is like, I feel like I also need to be fighting this fight right now if it's ever going to improve. But yeah, it's like really, really challenging. It's a feminist issue, but it's also just, you know, a working class issue as well. How can people have kids in the city? And this is partly why people do feel like forced to move out of Toronto. And people love Toronto, and I love Toronto, and we love downtown Toronto. But, you know, without affordable childcare, that is like a real barrier for people to stay.
So the last one on the platform is your views on the strong mayor system proposal. And as a city councilor, how would you hold the mayor accountable in that situation?
Yeah, so of course, I believe in the most like robust form of democracy. And I think that like giving the mayor stronger powers revokes that. I feel like, you know, the way that city council works, the mayor is one vote. Yes, there is a system where he has allies that he can whip votes, but ultimately at the end of the day, councilors are meant to represent their local communities. And if they feel like voting against the mayor is what's in the best interest for their local community, I would hope that councilors do that. So knowing that, this kind of policy, this kind of change would disrupt that model is very concerning. In terms of holding the mayor account, I think that ultimately running as a left-wing candidate, I feel like regardless of whether there is like the strong mayor system or not, you know, it definitely isn't going to be easy to hold the mayor accountable. You know, there's many challenges. It is an uphill battle, but the way that I feel like we can hold the mayor most accountable is through public pressure and through having kind of movements and communities on the ground saying that this is not the direction that we want our city to go in whatever the mayor is proposing, you know? And I think that that's part of why I'm running, is to bring new energy to City Hall, because our grassroots need to be re-energized, need to care that, you know, Toronto, like municipal politics typically has pretty low voter turnout. So why does it matter, you know? And I think that some of the questions you've asked, these kind of like platform topic areas, are all issues that are very, very important to people's everyday lives.
I guess final two questions. So what would you like to tell voters right now in the lead up to the October election?
Oh, so interesting. I mean, I really want voters to care. I think ultimately at the end of the day, like as an activist, as a community organizer, like that's all I've ever really done with other community members is really try to care about our local community, about the city. And I think that's really what, you know, this is about. It's not just about electing politicians, although it is in some ways, because knowing like how council works, there are going to be incumbents who are going to be in for the next 12, 16, maybe 20 years, you know. But ultimately it is, you know, I hope people care. I hope people want to, you know, improve the city and believe that it is possible to improve our city. And I think that, you know, this is a chance to kind of have these conversations. I'm really excited to talk as much as possible to like the 120,000 people who live in University Rosedale and knock on doors and go to parks and transit stops and just really know that like this isn't, it's not, it's, you know, we can't just be complacent. We can't just settle for the status quo. The election is in, you know, 2.5 months. There is time to even like push the mayor on issues or, you know, to have these conversations on a citywide policy basis or as like really, really hyper local, like your neighborhood, your park. These are the things that like we need fixing. You know, I think that I just really want people to feel passionate that the city matters and that they matter to the civic process.
Great. And how can they learn more about your campaign?
Yeah, I'm Diana Yoon, TO at everything. So, you know, I think that's really where it starts. And I think the campaign is just starting. And I think part of that is knowing that as a collective project, we want people to get involved and we, you know, we want people to be up, like, you know, to stay updated, but we also want people to like contribute and shape the platform and to like really work on this with us. So yeah, I mean, connect with me on Twitter, on Instagram, but also just, you know, like my email will also just be dianauto@gmail.com because it's easy. And yeah, I feel like I hope I can be pretty approachable and pretty accessible. And I'm really excited to kind of see how the next few months unfold.
That was Diana Yoon, candidate for Ward 11, University Rosedale. Toronto's municipal election is scheduled for October 24th. I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative.